interrupting the current neo-Uranial, climate-challenged, behaviorally controlled, energy-starved, alien-invaded, nuclear-glowing, postulated cricketism to bring you behind the woodshed. This is Cricketude Busting Episode BTWRLM 646. And remember, being free is not a spectator sport, so get you behind the woodshed. And relative to both those truths, I saw a post in my feed that was, it seemed like very sound advice. It said, it's time to gang up on the problem instead of each other. And I'm not sure who in their right mind could disagree with that. And one thing I think most people can also agree on is how expensive health insurance has become since Obamacare. But apparently not high enough, as health insurance is set for a steep hike. For goodness sake, aren't those protected by tariffs? Americans can expect a significant jump in health insurance premiums over the next couple of years, with costs set for the largest increase in at least half a decade. Well, that was right about COVID, wasn't it? Multiple industry surveys project the businesses will see premiums rise by 9% or more in 2026, costs likely to trickle down to employees, per the Washington Post. I said that one because where's this information really coming from? How are they getting the inside line on all this? And maybe it's a plan. And these are the government. Again, I call it news stis, not just the news. This is notice in the news. The Wall Street Journal cites similar findings, noting that already steep boosts in recent years have pushed the annual expense for family coverage high enough to equal the price of a small car. For the 24 million people enrolled in Affordable Care Act plans, did I say Obamacare? The situation looks particularly grim if pandemic-era federal subsidies expire as scheduled and fall off the subsidy cliff. Average premiums could soar by more than 75% next year. Y'all prepared for this? A mix of forces is fueling the spike. The new high-priced obesity drug, known as GLP-1S, are being prescribed at a much higher rate, with usage rising sharply over the past few years. These drugs can run up to $800 a month, prompting more employers to tighten the coverage requirements. Insurers are also bracing for possible imposition of tariffs on pharmaceutical imports, especially from China, which supplies a large share of U.S. drug ingredients. The Trump administration's consideration of tariffs as high as 250%. Could further inflate costs. The looming end of ACA subsidies is drawing bipartisan concern, even among traditional opponents of the program. Recent polling shows wide support for extending the subsidies, with vulnerable lawmakers warning of steep increases for families if the credits disappear. Listen carefully there, the credits disappear. You're a taxpayer. You ain't getting it until you ask for it back. About 4 million people could drop coverage in the first year without the extra help, and those remaining in the ACA marketplace are likely to see even higher premiums as a result. Remember, insurance is a mutual fund, if you will, basis. So everybody's supposed to be contributing. I'm not saying I say that's exactly all that's going on. I'm just saying that's how it's worked out. So if there's less people contributing, that they're going to cost each one more. Congress has approved these subsidies twice, but there's no guarantee it will do so again before the 2026 midterms. The Congress certainly has no trouble funding death insurance, and the compromised woke uniparty wouldn't dare not fund it in Palestine, despite the bombshell Gaza genocide report that gives UN right to intervene militarily to stop Israel. A new comprehensive UN inquiry that concluded that Israel is committing genocide in Gaza. Ex-UN rapporteur and veteran international law expert Dr. Alfred DeZayas explains why this is hugely important and what the world can do about it if it wants to. Key finding. Can I just interject? The guy behind which had declared this is genocide like a long time back, and all you have to do, again, is go to the black and white and look at the list of the elements. And they've been fulfilled for quite a long time. why this has to wait this long to do this has really been the biggest irritation to me. But it's also showing one other thing about the UN. And the UN is on the ropes at this point right here. If it can't straighten this thing up. And I'm what the purpose of the UN was a good thing. What it's been used as a tool of harm is quite the other. But key findings, if you didn't know any better. Israel's actions, killing, maiming, causing mental harm to Palestinians, deliberately inflicting conditions of life calculated to bring about their physical destruction, taking measures to prevent births. Check 4 out of 5 of the 1948 Genocide Convention criteria for genocide, per the report. Intent proven. Crucially, DeZayas says, the inquiry shows, quote, how the statements of Israeli political and military leaders prove the intent required in Article 2 of the Convention to destroy in whole or part the Palestinian population. The extensive report is proof, quote, that Israel is waging war not only against the Palestinians in Gaza, but against the UN Charter and international law in general, according to the top legal observer. And the West is complicit. Quote, governments that have provided military, economic, political, diplomatic, and propagandistic support are also accountable, Isaiah says. The U.S., U.K., France, and Germany, quote, are all complicit in the genocide under Article 3E of the Genocide Convention. And I've mentioned the exact same thing behind Woodshed. Again, this is all known if you just go read the black and white. The problem is it's not being enforced. And so I asked the question before, there's no remedy, if there's no enforcement, is there really a law? And look at what this is talking about then. And if there's really not a law, and these things don't stand up, what can you expect at home? Has been my argument, if it's an argument, I haven't proven it yet, at home. The carnival mirror of what's happening out there will turn on what's going on in the gates. Except the carnival mirror warps the perception, and it doesn't look the same, but it functions the same. And now we go right back to the Libra code. You know, the one you see, Article 1, first one. They don't have to tell you that you're being genocided. They don't have to tell you that you're suffering war crimes. They don't have to tell you you're an occupied people. You know them when you see them. And if you don't have the knowledge of when to see them, well, I guess you're going to be occupied for a long time. UN response options. And this is where the rubber's going to meet the road and maybe slick out and we go over the edge with that organization. Recognition of Palestinian statehood, which alas will not save the lives of Palestinians. Israel's expulsion from the UN pursuant to Article 6 in the UN Charter, improbable given the need for Security Council and hence U.S. approval, but if they're not following it anyway, does it matter? The UN can strip Israel diplomats of UN accreditation, as was done against South Africa in the 1970s during apartheid. Crucially, this measure would not require Security Council backing. The UN has the legal framework to intervene using the 2005 Responsibility to Protect Doctrine. And I find these dates interesting. It isn't just been created or recognized since 2005. This is a long term. International law is almost time out of mind type norms of international interaction. Protect Doctrine of the UN General Assembly could adopt a uniting for peace resolution authorizing nations, quote, to take military action to stop the genocide, bypassing the Security Council veto. The UN's last chance to save its credibility? If the United Nations fails to take action, it will lose the little authority and credibility it still has, Isaiah summed up. My opening point, as I noticed it as well, I could care less about the UN the way it's turned out to be. It's actually an obstruction. And I think governments would do better to work amongst themselves diplomatically using those same norms privately. Again, the United Nations was set up as a tool for, we call it the West now. It's the interests of the United States. UN recognizes the state of Palestine without Hamas. Ukraine votes yes. U.S. and Israel vote no. And I forgot to touch on that state, the Palestinian state. You hear, they're not asking the Palestinians. It's not up to the UN to determine. And this is one of my other problems with the fall of the nations and the Palestine itself and the government that was there and the people that were there. There's so much more that's being shoved under the rug on this thing. It's quite an embarrassment, if not a disgrace. And worse, because a genocide is happening and has been. The General Assembly also overwhelmingly supported disarming the militant group and making it cede control of Gaza. Well, where does the UN Charter say nations can trespass and decide for a people their territory and government? Now, these nations did not have a right to recognize the state of Israel in Palestine, and they have no right to determine its limits nor that of the people that live there and have lived there. And that latent point isn't it. Why the nations do nothing, though having the at least the international duty and obligation to stop genocide, war crimes, and other atrocity. And unless someone can show me different, all these nations agreed to the genocide of the Palestinian people in Palestine, because once the people are gone, there are no people to have the right recognized under the charter that those nations claim to honor, which is despicably evil. Why, the UN must be gone. Its work's deemed odious and unconscionable. Your world, material witnesses, is a global crime scene. The United Nations General Assembly overwhelmingly supported the resolution on Friday calling for a two-state solution between Israel and Palestine without the involvement of Hamas. The declaration calls for a lasting settlement to the Gaza war on the basis of separate states. It also calls for the militant group Hamas to be disarmed and excluded from governance in the enclave. The non-binding measure passed with 142 votes in favor, 10 against, and 12 abstentions, with Ukraine supporting it and Israel and the U.S. opposing. Remember, Hamas is currently their political arm. They have an internal problem between two governing factions. That's not up for the world to decide. So, you might say, the U.S. and Israel voted no to interfere with their self-determination right as well. No, they don't have a right to vote, being they are the criminal perpetrators of the genocide, war crimes, and other atrocities. And how can Russia vote to determine those rights as it denies the Ukraine government to determine those rights for the Donbas? As no nation did, Russia had no right to recognize the state of Israel, but every criminal tried to hide his criminal act or cover his tracks, it seems, like the U.S. and Israel just did. Nor does any nation have the right to impose a two-state solution on the Palestine or upon the Palestinian people as a matter of international law duly respected. Not as we witness it is corrupted, is evidence of global crime of the century. When the Arab states call for UN suspension of Israel, Islamic leaders have urged coordinated steps against the Jewish state over its ongoing siege of Gaza and the recent strike on Qatar, as they start to step into what now is available to them. Arab and Islamic leaders have called for Israel to be suspended from the United Nations over its alleged violations of the organization's charter. The demand comes amid Israel's military campaign in Gaza after last week's airstrike on Doha, which left 6 people dead, including a Qatari security officer. On Monday, the leaders of the League of Arab States and the Organization of Islamic Cooperation convened an emergency summit in Doha. In a final statement following the summit, the group called on member nations to consider the compatibility of Israel's membership in the UN with its charter and coordinate efforts to suspend Israel from the organization. Israel has said its Doha strike targeted Hamas officials, although Arab Islamic leaders branded it as a dangerous escalation that exposes extremist hostility of the Israeli government. They also accused Israel of undermining the international mediation and peacemaking process, given that Qatari capital had been used as a key venue for peace talks between West Jerusalem and Hamas. The statement urged all states to review diplomatic and economic relations with Israel and take legal and effective measures to stop Israel's actions, including sanctions, supply of arms and dual-use exports. So all you hear there, talk, 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 isn't it? Nothing comes out of this ever, it seems. You heard early on that there is an action the UN could take militarily. Did you hear that come out of that leak? Is why nothing's going to probably happen on this. And why we're seeing the problem. And that, there's no international law. There's nothing, no remedy against genocide. And just how culpable is the United States to committing genocide? As we heard, they are culpable. Isaiah tells us that, if you didn't hear behind the woodshed. Self-sufficient defense. Israel can't survive without the United States. What does that say? Essentially, the United States is the actor. The genocide will not happen without the United States. And Israel is not up to it. They can't survive. Israeli PM Benjamin Netanyahu is pushing for a totally self-sufficient defense industry or arms embargoes tightened over the Gaza war. But is it a realistic aim? Clearly, Israel does not exist here without the United States. It's seeking to be self-sufficient. Israel does not do anything without the United States paying for it. The Zionist Federation movement cannot commit genocide without the United States intimately helping. Dependence on the United States. Is it a realistic aim? Netanyahu's pledge is to absolutely not realistic, veteran war correspondent Elijah Magnier tells Sputnik. Quote, Israel cannot survive without the United States, not only in armament supply, but also intelligence and participation to support the Israeli Air Force, but particularly during long-range operations, including bombing missions against groups like Hezbollah and Lebanon. Have we forgotten about Iran and Yemen? Intelligence and beyond Palantir, beyond the surveillance state, cyber gulag Trump is creating. U.S. support for Israel. The U.S.-Israel 10-year security agreement running from 2019 to 2028 is valued at $38 billion, Bravo dollars, an average of $3.8 billion per year. It follows a $30 billion deal signed in 2007, which expired in 2018. Such a deal. Israeli Air Force defenses aren't homemade. The Iron Dome missile defense system is a co-production between Israel arms firm Rafael and United States companies. The David Sling system is also a joint Rafael Raytheon development with U.S. input in design, research, and development and production. The Arrows 2 and 3 anti-ballistic missile systems are co-funded by the United States and Israel, with Boeing handling 40% to 50% of Arrow 3 production. Hard to replace quickly and cheaply. The THAAD ABMs remain fully U.S. run. Who supplies Israel? And if they're U.S. run, they must be U.S. soldiers. Right there in Palestine. SIPRI estimates that from 2020 to 2024, the United States provided 66% of Israelis armed jets, armored vehicles, and guided bombs. Germany have 33% included frigates and torpedoes. Now, as we hear what's going on in Ukraine and what Trump has to send to Europe, where's all that stuff coming from but the United States? Italy contributed 0.9%. Replacing them with domestic production is impossible. So it can be anticipated because Israel can't survive without the United States and the government is overrun by compromised, treasonous Congress critters who don't know any of the oath they wouldn't breach, that the United States would veto a vote in the National Security Council to stop the genocide of the Palestinians because stopping genocide is not in that all-important United States interest that peace president Trumpster uses to make war on and oppress people through violating fundamental rights he took an oath to uphold. As do 250 compromised U.S. government congressional unregistered agents of a foreign government on your dime. And why are 250 United States legislators currently in Israel? They went to perform they went to endorse. They went to fuse domestic governance with foreign allegiance at a moment when Israel faces global scrutiny, rising civilian deaths in Gaza, and mounting calls for accountability. Timing was deliberate. The message was clear. They ignored Palestinian officials. They ignored the West Bank. They ignored dissenting voices. They walked Gaza's borders, toured Kibbutz Be'er Re'i, and stood where hundreds were killed and kidnapped at the Nova Music Festival. They planted trees. They received intelligence briefings. They met hostage families. They did not question. They certainly did not question the recent uptick in attacks in the Christian quarter on radical Jewish extremists feeling empowered and protected under Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's government. Nor did they profess Christians among them question why a Catholic abbot was ordered to hide his cross necklace near Western Wall in Jerusalem by claiming it that it was inappropriate in the land Christ was born, walked, died, and resurrected. There were no photo ops because they likely did not officially visit the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, which contains the site where Jesus was crucified at Calvary and Golgotha, and the location of Jesus' empty tomb where he was buried and is risen. Both locations are considered immensely holy sites by most Christians. They did not challenge. They applauded. They absorbed. They returned home with one message: total, unconditional support. The American Israel Education Foundation, tied to AIPAC, planned every step. The itinerary was created. Counterpoints were erased. The lawmakers followed. Every handshake, every tree, every briefing reinforced the lesson. They absorbed the story. They left carrying a clear message. Support is absolute. And the real danger is here. Lawmakers will carry this forward. Curricula may shift. Budgets may be rewritten. Resolutions may pass faster. Public debates may be muted. Support that looks symbolic today becomes policy tomorrow. Support today is law tomorrow. People will look back and realize what happened, and it will be too late. Domestic policy is being shaped abroad. State-level decisions will now reflect foreign priorities. Political alignments is no longer reactive. It is being pre-programmed. If a state passes a resolution tomorrow condemning a boycott or funding the program, these trips are part of why it will pass. And I add, what about those already passed foreign influence resolutions of yesteryear working against you today that no one was aware enough to see then? Those that got us here. Israel threatens to unleash biblical plagues on Yemen's Houthis. Defense minister's threat follows report of new missile launch from Yemen. The threat was issued by Israel Katz on social media on Thursday amid reports that the Iran-backed Houthis have stepped up their missile attacks against Israel. The Yemeni rebel force has resumed attacks in retaliation for last week's assassination of Prime Minister Ahmad Galeb al-Ramhawi and several senior officials. Quote, the Houthis are firing missiles at Israel again, a plague of darkness, a plague of the firstborn. We will complete all 10 plagues, Katz wrote in Hebrew on X, as tensions continue to escalate between his country and the Yemeni group. Earlier on Thursday, the Israeli army said a missile fired from Yemen had struck outside Israeli territory. The previous day, the military had reported it intercepted 2 Houthi missiles. The Yemeni group on Monday claimed responsibility for a missile attack in the Red Sea that hit an Israeli-owned tanker, Scarlet Ray. Katz's threat refers to the 10 disasters that the Bible books of Exodus say were inflicted on Egypt by the Hebrew God to convince the Pharaoh to free the enslaved Israelites. Sounds similar to Ukraine, the United States bioweapons labs. And Netanyahu also threatened Congress, in so many words. Remember those exploding pagers and the golden pager there that was given to Trump? Netanyahu addresses a Democrat and Republican U.S. congressional delegation in Israel, stating, quote, but do you have cell phones? You have cell phones here. You're holding a piece of Israel right there. You know that? This is on a video. It was taken on September 15, 2025. And in doing so, Saint Yehu threatens the lives of every person, including U.S. government, with the exploding pager-style phones for compromise. As he's starting to run your government. So what Saint Yehu says, so Congress now threatens you. House passes bill targeting boycotts of Israel amid free speech concern. So listen very carefully to these few weeks of this free speech being under attack by this administration, by the Israelis, by quite a few people, a lot of governments. It's been ongoing for quite a while now. But now it's coming right to the surface. They're not hiding at all. In a significant move that has sparked controversy and debate, the House of Representatives recently passed a sweeping defense budget that includes a provision aimed at penalizing companies engaged in what it terms politically motivated boycotts of Israel. This legislation, which is part of the National Defense Authorization Act, seeks to bar contractors who participate in boycotts from accessing a substantial portion of federal contract dollars. Over half of the $755 billion Bravo dollars spent by the United States government on contracts last year flowed through the Defense Department. Let me remind you what they just said at the genocide finding. This bill makes it impossible to comply with that. The amendment, championed by Representative Lauren Boebert of Colorado, has been criticized as an attempt to shield Israel from accountability regarding its human rights practices. Critics argue that it undermines the First Amendment rights of individuals and organizations advocating for Palestinian rights through the boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement. Hassan El-Tayyib, Legislative Director for Middle East Policy at the Friends Committee of National Legislation, emphasized that this provision is designed to penalize those protesting Israel's actions, which he argues should be protected under free speech. The legislative process surrounding this amendment has been notably swift, with its approval occurring without substantive debate during a voice vote. The full budget bill passed the House with a vote of 231-196, garnering support from 214 Republicans and 17 Democrats. However, the Senate is currently deliberating its version of the budget, which does not include anti-BDS provisions, leaving the future of this legislation uncertain. Legal experts have raised concerns about the constitutionality of such anti-BDS measures. Brian Haas, an attorney with the American Civil Liberties Union, warned that the scope of the Boebert Amendment could extend beyond targeting the BDS movement, potentially impacting other social movements that are viewed unfavorable by conservative groups. He noted that the amendment's language explicitly aims to punish political views, which raises significant First Amendment issues. So why this assault on that First Amendment? You know, Boebert needs to be removed from office for dereliction of duty to the oath of office she took, undertaking not only to faithfully execute those laws, but to defend them. And the other 230 unregistered foreign agents, including the Speaker, need to be removed also for the same reason. Remember, they were supposed to be representing you. Did they ever call you to find out what you thought? As well, all of them, for making war on the laws of the United States. You know what I just said there, folks, how serious these statements are. What I'm alleging is going on, and we, as the people, stand by in silence while our government commits genocide. And from the infringe as many fundamental rights as you can or get away with department, Attorney General Pam Bondi says DOJ will be targeting people who use hate speech. There's free speech, and then there's hate speech, the Attorney General said in an interview on Katie Miller's podcast, which has received pushback from some on the right. Just some, folks, if you can hear this nonsense. Free speech is not hate speech. It's not supported in law. And this is your Attorney General, the head prosecutor of the United States government. Asked if the Justice Department would be cracking down on groups that engage in such speech, Bondi said, we will absolutely target you, go after you, if you are targeting anyone with hate speech, anything. And that's across the aisle. But remember that. This administration's only in here for a certain amount of time. And the other party, the other part of the Uniparty, steps in. You can't have that hate speech in the world in which we live, she said. There is no place, especially now, especially after what happened to Charlie in our society, Bondi said, referring to Charlie Kirk, the conservative activist who was assassinated on a college campus in Utah last week. Kirk took the opposite position on such speech in a post on X last year. He said, quote, hate speech does not exist legally in America. There's ugly speech, there's gross speech, there's evil speech, and all of it is protected by the First Amendment. Keep America free, he wrote. Quote, it's free speech, but you shouldn't be employed anywhere if you're going to say that. And employers, you have to have an obligation to get rid of people. You need to look at people who are saying horrible things, and they shouldn't be working with you, Attorney General Platinum Blonde Pam Bondi said. And Trump is up with the infringement and the use of the term hate speech because, well, old Nick Gear's support for all things anti-defamation, League Zionism, as well as taking the affront personally as an attack against him, the narcissist he seems to be at every turn, the insistence that fundamental and constitutional rights not be infringed, he finds offensive to him. President Donald Trump seemed unconcerned about the remarks when asked about them Tuesday by a reporter from ABC News. Quote, we'll probably go after people like you because you treat me so unfairly. It's hate. You have a lot of hate in your heart. Maybe they'll come after ABC, Trump said. Maybe they'll have to go after you, he added. Trump and his administration will come after the homegrown, anyone that dares to question him. And all y'all are presumptive pre-crime haters to question the Bondi breach, as y'all are to question the genocide of the Palestinians. But as is the case, where the campaign trail pledge collides with the unexpected misalignment with the pavement of reality, there's going to be at least a road rash. Trump world turns on Pam Bondi over talk of hate speech crackdown. Bondi found herself in hot water, which I guess that's after the accident she had, after seeming to say she wanted the Department of Justice to disregard the First Amendment. Bondi faced near instant backlash after saying her department was looking to prosecute people for hate speech following the intense and polarized public response to conservative activist Kirk's murder. And I'm really pushing forward on this, saying this hate speech. Remember that. That's all she said. And she's going to say something a little different here to try and do the fancy pants thing. But this backlash requires her to try to diminish the wreck she caused. And by Tuesday evening, Bondi was scrambling to clarify her comments, wherein she said, freedom of speech is sacred in our country, and we will never impede upon that. Less than a day after suggesting she'd sick the Department of Justice on people for their unsavory takes on Charlie Kirk's death, Attorney General Pam Bondi said she'd never impede upon Americans' right to free speech. And I find that fascinating. Remember what they're doing to the immigrants, or those wanting to be Americans. My intention was to speak about threats of violence that individuals incite against others. So can we just slow up right there? Saying hate speech is not threats of violence. And threats of violence is already handled under the law. So this is not going to air out too well. but they're saying it anyway. While right-wing critics were able to get Bondi to denounce her constitutionally questionable DOJ directive, those same free speech crusaders had zero problem personally targeting anyone who dared to disrespect Kirk's memory. Her apparent willingness to disregard the First Amendment left some of President Donald Trump's staunchest allies up in arms. Senator Ted Cruz told Politico that no matter how evil and bigoted and wrong words may be, they cannot be criminalized, while Speaker of the House Mike Johnson told the press it was un-American to censor and silence disfavored viewpoints. But also Ted Cruz defends hate speech, says Charlie Kirk critics should suffer the consequences. While speaking at Politico's AI and Tech Summit in Washington on Tuesday, Cruz said that the First Amendment absolutely protects hate speech before declaring that the people who cheered for the death of Kirk are not immune from consequences. Wait, what? People who cheered for the death of Kirk are not immune from consequences. Consequences for exercising a fundamental right to freely speak? Well, according to compromised fork-tongued Ted Cruz, yeah. Quote, we've seen teachers in high schools and elementary schools posting online celebrating. We've seen university professors posting, in my view, can I repeat that? In my view, not me, not the guy behind the woodshed, in Ted Cruz's view, they should absolutely face the consequences for celebrating murder. Apparently, Cruz's view is also a breach of his oath of office. Meanwhile, Attorney General Pam Bondi faced scrutiny after she said during the Monday's episode of the Katie's podcast that the Justice Department will absolutely target anyone who attacks others with hate speech following Kirk's death. Again, I want to emphasize, she did not say violence or inciting it, which are crimes. Also, that's all she had to do, and change her tactic. But see, what's the problem? The problem is, they really are after the First Amendment. They really are after encumbering, infringing, or destroying inviolate and fundamental rights. Cruz defended Bonnie's comments against the backlash while speaking at Politico, claiming to Politico that her words were misconstrued. And I'm not sure how anyone can misconstrue that. Not only is hate speech not a thing, if it were a thing, it cannot be misconstrued as to be criminal. And hate speech includes the pretext known as anti-Semitism. Also, Ted Cruz, Trump administration will go after rising anti-Semitism on college campuses. And those of you that have been listening behind the woodshed or pay attention to the news, you'll know this is from 2024. Also, Ted Cruz, I'll tell you something that you're going to see in the New York next year with the new Department of Justice, a new attorney general, and a new director of the FBI, we're going to see the federal government going after anti-Semitism on college campuses. You're going to see federal investigations. You're going to see the federal prosecutions, Cruz told John Katzimatidze on his radio show Katz Roundtable. Seemed pretty predictive, didn't it? What's going on right now? They're following through? Now remember, Johnson was in on this statement too, so also Johnson in 2024. House passes bill aimed to combat anti-Semitism amid college unrest. Seems pretty consistent to me for all the flag waving they're doing around the First Amendment. The House of Representatives passed a bill on Wednesday aimed at addressing reports of rising anti-Semitism on college campuses, where activists angered by Israel's war against Hamas have been protesting for months and more recently set up encampments on campus grounds. the Anti-Semitism Awareness Act was the adoption of the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance's definition of anti-Semitism for the enforcement of federal anti-discrimination laws regarding education programs. The ADL is intimately involved in promoting this myopic, racist, wrongful definition. The Anti-Defamation League is one of the cancers of our age, which the ADL, essentially CEO Greenblatt, aggressively lobbies governments, educational institutions, law enforcement agencies, and businesses to adopt the problematic International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance working definition of anti-Semitism, which conflates anti-Zionism and anti-Semitism, including among its examples, and which is used to threaten the First Amendment right of freedom of speech for all Americans, and endorsed two executive orders issued by President Donald Trump in 2019 and 2025, targeting critics of Israel in the United States, students in particular. The order signed in February 2025 threatens non-U.S. citizens with deportation for protesting in support of Palestinian human rights. And if I get to the end of this, there's an update on the guy, one of the guys they took out for that. As with that anti-BDS law supported by the ADL, the free speech advocates condemned the order as an attack on the First Amendment. Also, the ADL demonizes Palestinians, Arab Americans, and others working for freedom and equality for Palestinians, smearing them as anti-Semites and supporters of terrorism, while the Palestinians are Semitic people. Proving the ADL and a CEO Greenblatt appearing to be an unregistered agent of a foreign country, as well as all the government Zio-compromised critters, are willfully ignorant of the definition of anti-Semitism, or willfully use the term anti-Semitic as cover to commit anti-Semitism and infringe and criminalize fundamental rights people expect the government is to honor and protect, but doesn't. The bill passed with a 320-91 vote. 70 Democrats and 21 Republicans voted against the measure. So 321 representatives, including Johnson, need to be gone from the House, and showing that focus is on infringing free speech as well. Many of these Republicans didn't say a word when Trump and others in Charlottesville and other places were saying truly anti-Semitic things, but all of a sudden, now they want to bring forward bills that divide Democrats and weaponize this, Representative Pramila Jayapal said. Again, it's the Uniparty, and they're using all this to their ancient advantage, and they all don't seem to understand what Semitic means to be anti-Semitic. We do see it being used as a weapon for a foreign political movement to bolster its support to go ahead and commit genocide. I don't even know what more to say when I hear that word genocide. Now we've got another group of people have identified and analyzed it. As I've gone through this, I've went through the law. We saw the ICJ came out with it. Now we're getting it more. Now they're actually moving and taking all this time to move in order to give what? Give the Arab nations the ability to provide lip service. But as they were having their meeting, another 100 Palestinians died. Among them, mostly children and women at this point. So as we see this attack on the First Amendment, it seems to me, and we see the fancy pants dance, it's, oh no, it's about violence. Well, it's really not about violence, otherwise she wouldn't have used speech. Or such an innocuous term, some undefinable term like hate, in order to describe what she was doing repeatedly. You would just go to what the doing a violent act against somebody, the crimes are, and she'd list those off, and that's what they'd be going after. But that won't fill the bill. That doesn't meet the agenda. They want us to not be able to speak. They want us to not think more than important. And most importantly, they don't want us to use that freedom to communicate to be able to set up our behavior in the way we would like, not the way they are dictating to us. So with the interference and censorship of the First Amendment in many different ways. I hope you're picking that up as well. All the ways that they can attack us with that. And how important that is. How those founding fathers picked that out, right? It's not an unknown. U.S. gearing up to unleash thought police. A new bill making its way through Congress would give Secretary of State Marco Rubio unprecedented authority to revoke passports of American citizens for potentially nothing more than their opinions. And I'm going to read this like it was written. We've got an adjustment and update to make, but I want you to understand this is the trial balloon they're floating in order to plant the seed for it. Sponsored by Representative Brian Mast, the legislation claims to target terrorists and traffickers. In reality, passports could be yanked from anyone accused or even suspected of aiding a terrorist group. No court, no due process. Civil liberties advocates warn this is a full-on attempt at thought policing. Rubio's past action suggests how this could play out. He revoked Turkish doctoral student Ramu Yasar Özturk's visa in March simply because of an op-ed critical of Israel. The court later found no wrongdoing on her part, as you read me report, anticipate, and then update that very case. Now this bill could extend that same logic and that same unchecked power to the U.S. citizens, so-called. In testing this trial balloon and the slings and arrows that were unleashed by the public against this tyranny, it is reported that the provisions of that particular bill, that particular part, was pulled from the bill, reminding us that we need to become vocal, or better, actually. Don't go quietly into this dystopian night. As I said, this is not a spectator sport. These people mean business, they mean to harm you. They mean to take away what we all thought we had, and we all thought we had permanently. Another breaking bulletin from the Department of Don't Let a Crisis Go to Waste, from President Donald, don't let a crisis that you can infringe upon fundamental rights go to waste, Trump. I am pleased to inform our many USA patriots that I have designated Antifa, a sick, dangerous, radical left disaster, as a major terrorist organization. I will also be strongly recommending that those funding Antifa be thoroughly investigated in accordance with the highest legal standards and practices. Thank you for your attention to this matter. So we need to slow way down right about now. First of all, Antifa is not an organization for which can be investigated. And slowing down a bit more to smell the approaching tyranny, Antifa is short for anti-fascist. And while we who get behind woodshed use the black and white instead of advocating violence, people persuaded to act out under the label of Antifa. A guy behind woodshed has routinely and repeatedly pointed out the corruption of public-private partnerships, which is fascism, and the current onshoring of private corporate exploitation of government by Trump, which is fascism. Requires getting behind the woodshed is necessarily anti-fascism when one is a constitutional representative of Republican form of government that is protecting themselves from that fascism, that Trump designated anti-fascism proponents, terrorists, is calling for the protection of fascist, non-constitutional representative Republican form government. Do I have that about right, Donald? I never knew a fascist, especially the billionaires, I didn't like. Trump? But well beyond the violence any Antifa does, Trump allows and does not stop the genocide in Palestine. And Trump and the United States is in no position to declare who a terrorist is or make up what an ideology is as. Look very carefully at what Orban just said. we're going to designate it as a terrorist, this ideology. Remember, as is not what it is. Like the, your fiat is as much, functions as money, but it's not money. It's not specie. And since the Judeo-Christians are making war on Christianity, it won't be much of a jump to designate Christians as terrorists. And I think the political Zionist Federation movement already has, using the anti-Semitism canard, a self-determining to be the chosen of God, displacing the final judgment of God, where no man has the authority or power, which can be read right there at Romans 2:28-29 that I've been reading and picking up on the last few episodes. And remember, your World War II vets and those buried at home and abroad are anti-fascists, the same as the Russians are. But watch the other groveling European countries fall for this Antifa buffoonery and declare a non-existent organization a terrorist. They all grovel, grovel, grovel. I think President Trump has targeted the wrong people, despite his rhetoric in support of the U.S. Armed Forces or making America great again. Unless he's not in control of the occupied government that is setting up the right, and he has become an unregistered agent of a foreign entity to attack inviolable fundamental rights, which the anti-fascist American soldiers died to stop. But don't take it from someone that is anti-fascism behind a woodshed. Let's hear it from the old gray lady who's seen a thing or two, though I don't think her name is Edna, who does know about not getting behind a woodshed alone when opening a can of whoopars. Can Trump actually designate Antifa a terrorist group? Here are the facts. The president has made the same declaration in 2020, but nothing came of it. His new declaration came amid broader threats against liberals after the Charlie Kirk killing. President Trump declared late Wednesday that he was designating the Antifa movement a terrorist organization amid a broader effort by his administration to threaten liberal protesters and donors to progressive groups after the killing of the conservative activist Charlie Kirk. Mr. Trump had made the same declaration in May of 2020, but nothing came of it, and that there are major factual and legal challenges to any government effort to formally designate Antifa a terrorist group in any substantive way. Here's a closer look. What is Antifa? It is a diffuse, sometimes violent, protest culture of far-left activists who want to stop the far right. The movement is associated with an aggressive form of protest that's adhered called direct action, which can sometimes cross the line into illegal or violent activity, like breaking store windows or setting police cars on fire. Interject right in here. You hear action going on. You don't hear words. You don't see speech. They don't talk. Direct action. That's all that Pam Bondi had to say. Nope, they're after your right to speak freely, such that we have it. Quote, Antifa is short for anti-fascist, and is most often used for referencing activists and protesters who support more direct methods of confronting the far right, said Jared Holt, a researcher of extremist movements at Open Measures, a company that monitors influence operations online. Some who have self-labeled with the term have engaged in threatening or violent behavior, but those individuals represent a small number of people who self-identify with the term. Is Antifa actually an organization? The answer? No. Antifa is labeled for a political subculture or protest style. The phenomenon does not have a leader, an initiation process, member roles, a headquarters, a bank account, or a centralized structure. Cynthia Miller Idris, an American university professor who studies domestic extremism, said Antifa was an idea that could mobilize people. She compared it to concepts of, or ideologies like white supremacy and Islamist extremism, as distinguished from specific groups like Aryan Brotherhood or Al-Qaeda. There may be little groups organized around Antifa in neighborhood or community that meet up and share that stance, but it would be very hard to see that as a connected or an organizational form that could be tackled, she said, adding, there is no expert I've ever heard of who has identified Antifa as an actual organization. But what did Trump say? He announced the designation on his social media platform and threatened to investigate anyone funding Antifa. Quote, I am pleased to inform our many U.S. patriots that I am designating Antifa a sick, dangerous, radical left disaster as a major terrorist organization, he wrote. I will also be strongly recommending that those funding Antifa be thoroughly investigated in accordance with the highest legal standards and practices. Can the United States designate domestic groups as terrorists? Answer is no. Federal law empowers the executive branch to deem overseas groups foreign terrorist organizations. Let me interject and remind us, the district is not a state. The states are foreign to the district, notwithstanding its organization. You all is the migrant, apparently, as the president attempts to take his immunity and wipe away everything you thought was inviolate. The law gives such groups a due process right to hearings to challenge the designation. If the designation stands, the status allows the government to freeze such groups' assets and make it a crime to provide material support to them. Again, listen to the due process in that. There has to be notice that it is. There has to be notice and opportune time and place to respond and defend. And then only after all that process, then you still have the ability to be given notice that's the fact. And then you can act accordingly. That's the point about our laws. But there is no equivalent domestic terrorism law, noted Mary McCord, the former acting head of the Justice Department's National Security Division, during the tail end of the Obama administration and opening months of the first Trump administration. Quote, Trump can declare whatever he wants to declare, but there is no legal authority to actually designate a domestic group as a terrorist organization, even assuming that Antifa is an organization and not just an ideology, she said. Quote, that means this declaring has no legal impact. Maybe why he did it on Truth Social. Certainly it does not trigger criminal terrorism charges, like providing material support to a foreign terrorist organization. Would the Constitution allow this? First Amendment protections for freedom of speech and association would probably bar any attempt by Congress to enact a statute allowing the government to designate domestic groups as terrorist organizations and make it a crime to help them, legal specialists say. In a 2010 case in which the Supreme Court upheld the prosecution of a charity for steering funds to a designated foreign terrorist organization, Chief Justice John G. Roberts, Jr., distinguished the matter from sending funds to a domestic organization. Hypothetical attempts to criminalize support for designated terrorist groups under different circumstances might not, quote, survive First Amendment scrutiny, he wrote, adding, quote, we also do not suggest that Congress could extend the same prohibition on material support at issue here to domestic organizations. Because the First Amendment concerns when the FBI has carried out what are effectively domestic terrorism investigations into neo-Nazi organizations like the Base and Adam Wolfen Division, it has instead threatened them with criminal enterprises. So that's like RICO, right? R-I-C-O, Racketeering Influence Corrupt Organization Act. Mr. Trump and his administration are using the killing of Mr. Kirk and criticism of Mr. Kirk from some liberals to threaten the use of federal power to punish what it claims without evidence is a vast left-wing network that funds and incites violence. Democrats have warned that Mr. Trump appears to be using the killing as a pretext to suppress political dissent. Can I just interject what he has said himself? You hate me, don't you? You got hate in you. You're against me. Attorney General Pam Bondi threatened to go after you if you are targeting anyone with hate speech which as a matter of basic First Amendment law would be unconstitutional. Brendan Carr, the Federal Communications Commission chairman, threatened ABC over remarks by the late night host Jimmy Kimmel, and the network took him off the air. Against that backdrop, Trump's declaration that he would designate Antifa terrorist organizations was greeted with praise by various Republican lawmakers. What happened last time? Nothing. But Mr. Trump is less constrained now. In May 2020, as the Black Lives Matter protests swelled after the videotaped police killing of George Floyd in Minneapolis, and some protests were marred by rioting, Mr. Trump declared on social media that the federal government, quote, will be designating Antifa as a terrorist organization. The first Trump administration did not follow through on his declaration, but that does not mean that the second Trump administration will not try to do so this time, even if there is no clear legal or factual basis to justify such a declaration. Again, that's my main problem with Trump. He doesn't go back to his oath and say, I've got something to protect and honor. He just says, I'm going to just break it all down. I'm going to challenge it whatever I want. And if you don't like what I want, you're a terrorist. Mr. Trump and his team have systematically sought to install loyalists in his second term who would not seek to constrain him. For example, back in 2020, Mr. Trump wanted to use the military against protesters, but his administration did not follow through after his top aides resisted. But in June, after some protests against his immigration crackdown in Los Angeles turned violent, Mr. Trump sent federal troops into the streets of that city to suppress the demonstration, and then continued to use them for police functions for months in a way a judge has ruled illegal. The administration has appealed the ruling. Notably, the second Trump administration has already been pushing the limits of the president's terrorism designation power by declaring various foreign criminal gangs and drug cartels to be foreign terrorist organizations, even though they are motivated by profit, not religion or ideology. And let's go to the terrorism definition. They have to be intending to change the popular political structure when they're doing it. So go to those definitions in the law. You find out what they can and cannot, what his the limits of what he can and can't do, what he has to identify. And remember, he's going to extend that to all the homegrown that he deems hates him. This is BTW RLM 646. But I was thinking a little about that. You know, just any president, not just him, any president that starts to embarrass the office, I think needs to be told that. I think he needs to stop embarrassing the office. But he'd do well to start looking at the black and white, I think, wouldn't he? Because this all seems to be right there, fairly well. Yes, there's fringe areas that may need to be challenged, but he's just running everybody down. He doesn't care. It's about him. Oh, you insulted me. You hate me. But Trump also wants to abolish due process. Trump says military carried out second strike on Venezuela boat. President says strike killed 3 male terrorists. Okay, so keep attaching all the things that he ought not to be able to do that he is doing. He just does it. And I'm going to have to remind everybody as I read that there, the PATIRT Act, or 911, created everybody, at least a misdemeanor, and a presumed terrorist. And it's partly why he's able to kind of pull this off, although it has to have those elements to match. And all that has really caused a change in this country for the worse. President Trump announced that the U.S. military again targeted a boat, he says, was carrying drugs from Venezuela, killing 3 aboard the vessel. This morning, on my orders, the U.S. military forces conducted a second kinetic strike against positively identified extraordinarily violent drug trafficking cartels and narco-terrorists in the Southcom area of responsibility, the president said, in a Truth Social post. The strike occurred while these confirmed narco-terrorists, was there due process to confirm that? And then, even if they were, is there a death penalty for that? These confirmed narco-terrorists from Venezuela were in international waters transporting illegal narcotics, a deadly weapon poisoning Americans headed to the United States, Trump wrote, completely oblivious or not wanting to accept responsibility for the poisonous bioweapon he unleashed at warp speed in the Great COVID swindle. Quote, the strike resulted in 3 male terrorists killed in action. No U.S. forces were harmed in the strike. Like, that makes it better for us. The strike that Trump says was carried out Monday came 2 weeks after the military strike on what the Trump administration said was a drug-carrying speedboat from Venezuela that killed 11. The administration justified the earlier strike as a necessary escalation to stem the flow of drugs into the United States. Quote, these extremely violent drug trafficking cartels pose a threat to the United States national security, foreign policy, and vital U.S. interests, Trump wrote Monday. And there's the magic phrase, pose a threat to those undefined interests. When will the homegrown be targeted and murdered for merely existing contrary to an undefined U.S. interest? I feared for a U.S. interest. Well, but he was just jaywalking. Yes, but his furtive movements in jaywalking is a gateway crime which poses a threat to a U.S. interest. And the homegrown deserve every kinetic strike. I remind you about that little thing I told you about coming across the intersection, blowing a red light. Drone comes out of the sky, looks at your bank, the AI looks at your bank account, finds you can't pay the fee, and it just drones you out of existence, and the street sweeper comes and cleans you up. And as Trump seeks more homegrown to prosecute, and together as the Zio Uniparty slips deeper into their victimhood persecutory delusions, I think we're headed for this soon. In the Newstis today, court in Africa state jails 2 for witchcraft plot to kill president. Legislation in Zambia criminalizes pretending to use supernatural powers to cause harm or fear. A Zambian court has sentenced 2 men to 2 years in prison with hard labor for allegedly attempting to use witchcraft to kill the country's president, Hakainde Hichilema. On Monday, magistrates fined Mayetambu, convicted 43-year-old Leonard Fury of Sinda, and 42-year-old Mozambican national Jason Mabuliza Kandule Day under the Witchcraft Act. The pair were arrested in December 2024 with charms, 12 bottles of concoctions, and a live chameleon, which were reportedly to be used in the ritual meant to cause the death of the president. It's my considered review that the convicts are not only the enemy of the head of state, but were also enemies of all Zambians, the magistrate said. Defense lawyer Agrippa Malondo sought leniency and asked the court to impose a fine, but the request was denied. The 2-year term will run from the date of arrest. They also received a concurrent 6-month term for possession of charms. Zambia's Witchcraft Act, enforced since 1914, criminalizes pretending to use supernatural powers to cause harm or fear. It carries a maximum penalty of 3 years. In Tanzania, the High Court sentenced John Severini Chaley in 2022 for exercising witchcraft under the Witchcraft Act, sentencing him to 5 years in prison. And the victimhood Uniparty sympathizers will seek prejudicial drone execution for exercising the wizardry of hate speech, just like the Venezuelan people enjoy at the command of the drone Obama Peace Prize, they hate me, hold my beer, Trump, just cause. As they're tracking you down, it'll be easier and easier just cause you hate them. You anti-fascist. Visa enters the digital ID race. A handshake in Dubai signals a future where identity and payments merge into a single digital layer. Visa and Tech 5 have entered a... Have I said Visa? Visa card? Have I said that? Did I say that? You get that? Visa. Working out of Dubai to create this single digital layer on a handshake for a global agreement. Visa and Tech 5 have entered a 7-year global agreement aimed at accelerating the rollout of digital identity and payment systems under the broader framework of the Digital Public Infrastructure, or DPI. The initiative, formalized in Dubai, supports a vision promoted by organizations including the United Nations, the European Union, and the World Economic Forum, and Bill Gates. He's an organization all by himself. You see that? DPI strategies are being pushed as part of a global roadmap to digitize identity and financial access by 2030. Under this deal, Visa will combine its payments network with Tech 5 biometric and identity technology. Together, the companies plan to create integrated platforms that allow individuals to store verified credentials and use them to access services and conduct financial transactions. Have you heard about the global financial system? You get your Visa right here, right into there. The collaboration will center on developing identity wallets that not only verify users, but also include embedded payment capabilities. Tech 5 brings AI-powered systems capable of facial, fingerprint, and iris recognition, WorldCoin, while Visa contributes its infrastructure and global experience in digital payments. The move reflects a broader international push. Can I say that again? Did you hear that? I mean, are you picking this up, how fast this is moving along? Why I'm trying to advocate people move so quickly in their countries, at least the United States for sure, and get out of this digital thing and get into tangible sound money. Best as fast as you can. Have you watched silver now starting to go? The move reflects a broader international push to integrate verified digital identity with financial services. This is often presented as a way to reduce friction in service delivery and expand inclusion in private fraud. If you don't think DEI is still running with this inclusion, and remember, they wanted to reduce friction at the TSA when you're traveling about the country. However, privacy advocates continue to raise alarms over the implications of centralizing both identification and payment systems. And we've heard out of Palantir and Stargate, that's the least of it. By embedding biometric ID into the infrastructure of daily life, these systems risk enabling mass surveillance, particularly in regions where transparency and oversight are weak. What does he mean, risk? That's the plan. That's it. That's what they're doing with it. Claims around data protection and consent rely heavily on implementation details, many of which remain vague, and none of which apply if you don't implement. As bipartisan, uniparty lawmakers propose federal digital ID agency. They don't look at your agency unless they can steal it from you for something else. They're just going to create a new agency and work for you. No friction. Convenient. a federal digital ID watchdog could soon decide how anonymous you're allowed to be online. My token citizen. A bipartisan push in Congress is calling for the creation of a federal agency to regulate digital identity systems at a time of growing concerns over the digital ID push. The push for a national digital ID framework raises serious alarms for... Are you hearing those alarms, folks? Seriously, are you hearing these alarms? I've only been talking about it for over a decade. Are you starting to hear the alarms? And if you is, what you going to do about it? What are you doing about it? Being free is not a spectator sport. And if you're going to be a spectator, you're going to be in a prison. This gulag. Privacy advocates who warn that such systems could erode the last vestiges of online anonymity. They're talking about your life. By tying identity verification directly to state-issued credentials, a biometric data, the digital ID programs risk creating a surveillance infrastructure where every online interaction, transaction, or login is linked back to a traceable individual. Again, what do you mean risk? That's the plan. This is what it's all about. This fundamentally changes the nature of the internet, replacing pseudonyms participation with state-verified presence. And as I'm reading that, I just hear people saying, well, I don't do anything. I just do searches. Yeah, they're going to take all those searches and then they're going to make up something about you. And they're going to hate something about you. And then they're going to come after you as a homegrown. How could they dare search on what a Democrat's doing? Why aren't they searching on all the great things I'm doing as President Trump? Book 'em, Dano. Privacy protections promised by digital ID proponents often hinge on enforcement by government agencies that have a long history of overreach. While lawmakers emphasize that these tools will help curb fraud and impersonation, they rarely address how digital identification mandates could chill free speech or allow a whole new industry of hacking. And it's gone, folks. The biometric rollout has prompted a pushback in Congress with lawmakers raising questions, only questions, not just looking at it and saying, no, we're not doing this, period. And saying, well, we got to represent our people that we are, the car of our constituents, and I'm going to insert and make sure and inject it back into the system sound money, and then we don't have to worry about our people getting taken out. It's not what you're hearing out of Congress at all. Well, they question. With lawmakers raising questions about how the data is collected, stored, and used. How about we just don't do it? Then you don't have all that questioning, right? Nothing to question. As well as Trump wants to abolish quarterly earnings reports in favor of biannual. Here's what that would mean. And I've been talking to you about the private equity problem. And I want, again, I don't know about a lot of this stuff. I just see that I see problems within it. And if I don't have to report as a private equity concern, but biannually, I got more months to run fast and do what I need to do before I get to tell any, I have to tell anybody. And by then, it, again, too late. President Trump says he wants to ditch a staple of U.S. financial markets, quarterly earnings reports. If Mr. Trump's push is successful, the change would eliminate a requirement that's been in place for 55 years with the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission, or SEC, mandating quarterly reports since 1970. Isn't that interesting? What have I been talking about? Our problem, and returning back to that time. But now the world has changed, and he wants to reinstitute this timing that happened before they stole everything from us in the 70s, so they can steal more. Providing companies with a longer ramp for issuing the reports would save money and allow managers to focus on properly running their companies, Trump wrote on Monday in his social media post. And if this world was as right as rain, I would agree with him, but it ain't. Quote, did you ever hear the statement that China has a 50 to 100 year view on management of a company, whereas we run our companies on a quarterly basis? Not good, he added. So here we go with China again. Was there anything America did that it had anything to be made great again that Trump defers to China? Or is this an economic parity move to bring the two nations equal under the future that they want in the global financial system? The idea is for new, with academic and business experts suggesting such a change in years past for similar reasons as those cited by Mr. Trump. During his first term, Mr. Trump had asked the SEC to examine the 3 versus 6 month reporting requirements, although no change was made. So Trump was stumping for China's values for American greatness the entire time, it seemed. But Mr. Trump's renewed push could make such a corporate overhaul more likely today, TD Cowen analyst Jarrett Seeberg said in a Monday research report. Quote, we start with a 60% probability that the SEC switches to semi-annual from quarterly reporting, though the fact that this is an easy win for SEC Chairman Paul Atkins to deliver to Trump causes our bias to be that the prospects for action are more likely to rise than to fall, Seeberg noted. Here's what to know about the idea. Why is Trump proposing this now? Well, if we can believe CBS News. There are some new pushes from corporate sector. Oh, there we are. Nothing to do with Trump, right? He just takes the suggestions and implements when the billionaire boys ask him to do so. The long-term stock exchange, a national security exchange, said last week that it plans to petition the SEC to do away with the quarterly requirements. The San Francisco-based exchange list companies focused on long-term goals, with its founder Eric Ries criticizing the financial markets for pushing businesses to prioritize short-term wins. The proposed change also aligns with Trump's administration goals to ease regulatory burdens on companies, which, we think it's all for the up and up and the good. You really have to put your mind in this, that there's some bad actors out there like sharks and vultures waiting to take advantage. The goal to ease regulatory burdens on companies, which it has said would help unlock economic growth by reducing businesses' costs, maybe the whole business altogether. What's the benefit? Supporters of the change say quarterly reporting is too costly and time-consuming and discourages companies from wanting to go public. Well, that's a big casino out there, don't you know, on Wall Street. Maybe that's a good thing, that they don't go out there and go public. They also say company executives focus too much on hitting quarterly earnings targets and not enough on long-term planning. Well, isn't that just the internal politics of the company itself on how it's going to run? But anyway, they need to write a story here. Is there a downside? Those who favor quarterly earnings say the reports provide investors with valuable financial updates and make them aware of any new risks the company is facing. See how that works, as I was saying. Now they're going to move on the investors. The investors are going to be out of information. And if you're being taken over by a privateer vulture equity company, you won't know much. You don't know what the risks are. You don't even know if there's any risk left, since the company might be dead. 6 month reviews would deprive investors of those important insights, they argue. Quote, this might be great for long-term company builders, but terrible for public market investors who need timely data, noted one executive, Sam Kampner, the founder of analysis firm Salescraft AI, on social media on Monday. Having less information means you'd be making less informed investment decisions. What does the data show? A 2018 study published in the Harvard Business Review looked at a similar change in the UK, which stopped requiring quarterly reporting in 2014. The results were nuanced and fall somewhere between the two extreme narratives, Shivram Raj Gopal, a professor at Columbia Business School, wrote in a Harvard report. Moving away from the quarterly reporting did not end corporate short-termism and earnings management, but nor did it destroy any transparency, leaving investors in the dark, he added. Let me interject, in a broadcast that we heard after last week's Behind the Woodshed program that sounded put in, we heard how a vulture was using laws in order to take down companies in very creative ways, and the UK stepped up to stop that. And so I read that part, and I wonder whether or not this is a credible counter in a report where the government came in to not allow that type of takeover. Again, making it more a better right-as-rain type of business environment. What's the time frame for making a change? At least half a year, the TD Cowen Syberg noting that he believes that it would take the SEC 6 months to create a proposal based on the economic data. Quote, key indicators of the issue gaining momentum will be if Atkins discusses the issue in his public speeches in the coming months and it ends up on the agenda for the SEC's investor advisory committee, he said. Wouldn't this also leave the door open for longer for the efficient and stealthy private equity piracy? And remember, some of you that have the 401ks, I talked about that report where that may be where that steps in, and now these companies that had the report before, they take advantage of the fact you're not knowing they're being taken over for another many months. And then they're coming after your 401k. So I don't fully understand all this, and I don't have a 401k, so this is really not even information that I'm interested in. I'm looking at a complex economic financial overthrow that's being done behind the scenes. And I see the elements written in these stories. And I guess I'm only, this is like a PSA behind the woodshed. For those of you in that, and you want to maintain you have to maintain because of the way the laws are, your tax liabilities are, pay attention to what they're doing here. Now, why it might be going on now. As I said, I don't think there's a billionaire Trump doesn't like, especially the ones that he can partner with in a fascist arrangement. Also, Donald, don't ever say I'm not the greatest. Stop persecuting me, Trump. Trump proposes revoking licenses of critical American TV networks. Again, constant attack on the First Amendment. I am not saying I agree or disagree. I am just bringing these news today. My mind doesn't even have a concept to discuss with anybody. Like, I'll give you one. I think Jimmy Kimmel coming off the TV, I don't watch the guy. I don't even find him on the internet. But the couple things that I've heard come from him, doesn't matter to me that he got off. It's probably a good thing. But we're not talking about people. We're talking about the rights underlying it and the companies, what the companies are being pressured to do by outside forces. And you look at the ramifications to us, we the people, about having federal officials, any official, being able to dictate what we're going to be given. And then not taking up the protections or not leaving in the protections that would protect the people from the things that the modernization of the Smith-Month Act allowed, to have foreign forces come in and educate us to the things that they want to see, so that we are encouraged to agree to genocide. The U.S. president has claimed that television networks only give him bad publicity. Do we really want this to be the guiding light? I don't think so. Maybe send me an email and tell me what you think. Again, I don't talk to anybody, so I got to kind of look through this and keep my foundation where it is and make my observations from where they are. I don't interact with much. TV has been so long ago. I get into subject matter concepts for YouTube, and it's mostly to keep track of what's all going on here anymore. But this is all going in a bad way, and I think people need to be aware of it. I hope, again, step up. Let's start attacking the problem, not attacking ourselves. as that very insightful post said that I mentioned at the beginning of the broadcast. U.S. President Donald Trump has floated the idea of maybe revoking the broadcast license of American television networks that provide negative coverage of him. The suggestion came a day after ABC indefinitely suspended Jimmy Kimmel's late-night show following what it called offensive and insensitive comments made by the comedian about the assassination of conservative activist Charlie Kirk. If you can't hear the censorship right there, if you can't hear the control right there. Kimmel claimed on his program that Trump and his supporters were trying to score political points over Kirk's killing and compared the president's reaction to his death to how a four-year-old mourns a goldfish. Trump, who was returning from the UK aboard Air Force One on Thursday, told journalists that TV networks, quote, give me only bad publicity or press. I mean, they're getting a license. I would think maybe their license should be taken away, he said. However, the president noted that it will be up to the Federal Communications Commissioner, Chairman Brendan Carr, to rule whether to keep the networks on air or not. So far, the FCC head has been doing a great job, according to Trump. But the standard is the public interest in the government's interest, like in the national or the U.S. interest. What is that exactly, that it's used by an officer of the United States to challenge fundamental rights such as the free speech, the right of acquisition of the information or of thought, to make war on those laws and fundamental, even inviolate rights that they took an oath to uphold? And it isn't just Trump or the Republicans. Those on the Democrat side of the USS Unit Party use the same tyranny of censorship, don't they? In fact, the entire federal military is geared to cognitive dysfunction and perception management. And in support, Speaker Johnson just struck down a bill to repeal the Smith Modernization Act, which allows the government, federal, state, or foreign influence to lie to you, my listener, in order to control your perception, more importantly, your behavior. And all we hear now is about civil war, trying to keep the population divided and fighting amongst itself. But I noticed Lincoln's Civil War was not about the population fighting itself. It was actually certain state populations fighting against the imposition of federal tyranny. Remember, abolition of slavery was one of old, dishonest Abe Lincoln's stalking horses. So be careful when you hear the celebrities tooting Civil War. They likely have no interest in advocating peace, only in sensationalizing sensation. And worse, they likely don't know what they are talking about. Right, Tim Tool? See, we can easily turn off the degenerous Jimmy Kimmel. Not so easy to stop the federal or state boot stomping on your face. So we the people will need to do much better, which means it's time to get you behind the woodshed. Don't remain a cricket when tyranny is in the air. Do what you can, but don't stop, because pirateering parasitic tyrants won't until just after you are dead and they've harvested your organs, charging your estate or your loved ones for the carcass disposal, unless, of course, you opt in to become Soylent and Green, of course. Right, CEO BlackRock and interim co-chairman for the World Economic Forum, Rat Fink? And speaking of what might constitute censorable public interest, a clue. And communist, and just cause. Lawmaker proposes web blackout for Russians. The internet does more harm than good and should be switched off for weeks, a communist MP have said. And how is that going to work for your surveillance and tax apparatus, Mr. MP? Showing sustainable things green is well and beyond communism. So remember, Trump's censorship only affects you, not his administration, nor any that may follow. Russians should be forced off the internet on weekends or even entire weeks, Nikolai Arefev, an MP for the Russian Communist Party, has proposed. Doing so would have positive impact on people's health, he argued. The legislator floated the idea on Thursday while speaking to the news outlet's ABCEP. While acknowledging the importance of the internet for work and easy access to information, Arefyev argued that it should be restricted for extended periods of time. The internet currently does more harm than good, the MP said. The thing is, it seems to me that 70% of the internet is used to harm one's own health because people sit there for hours, days, years, ruining their eyesight and nerves. So how are your nerves going to be when you can't pay your commissary in the Siberian gulag? Arefyev's remarks have prompted fears of an imminent internet shutdown on Russian social media. Concerns were addressed by Arefyev's fellow MP and a member of the Parliamentary Committee on Informational Policy, Anton Nirkin, who explained that his statements did not reflect the official position of the legislature and that no plans to switch off the internet exist. The internet today is not only about communication and entertainment, but also about work, education, health care, government services, and commerce. It's effectively the infrastructure without which economic and social development is impossible, Nemkin told Russian media. Oh, the ever-important SMART infrastructure supporting economic, i.e. tax development, and social development, like social credit, social behavior. Yeah, like the Palantir Panopticon and Stargate surveillance systems at home, which is so beyond what communism can fully contemplate that floating the trial balloon gave the Russian government an opportunity to explain how comprehensive sustainable surveillance and control will be to all y'all, given it's such a small digital global gulag after all. As we get back to that issue relative to Mohammed Khalil and the new process that Trump didn't want to give him, and all the chaos that went into this, Colombia activist is accused of omissions on his green card application as his legal fight continues. Mohammed Khalil must be deported. Colombia activist is accused of omissions on his green card application as his legal fight continues. A U.S. immigration judge has ordered the deportation of Mahmoud Khalil, a pro-Palestinian activist known for his leadership in campus protests at Columbia University against Israel military action in Gaza. Again, attacking the First Amendment. And look what it's over. None of that. It's over, as I was saying before, the application. He submits it. It wasn't quite right. They identified omissions that he was supposed to be talking about. This is not at all what Trump made this out to be. And I think they got lucky a bit. And couldn't this have been done a lot smoother? As we'll talk about in a moment. The order issued by Judge Jamie Comins in Louisiana on Friday directs Khalil, a Palestinian originally from Syria and holding Algerian citizenship, to be removed to either Syria or Algeria. The decision was revealed via court documents released by the ACLU. So Trump had to create all this chaos to the point now the courts have offsetting orders in all this, because that judge in Louisiana is not the only judge involved. With all that extra expense and delay and trauma and hardship and making a national spectacle over a form omission instead of letting due process take its normal course. How efficient and cost-effective was that, Doge? How does that make America great again? The judge contended that Khalil failed to disclose significant affiliations, including his connections with the UNRWA, the UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees, and a Columbia student advocacy group on his green card application. The omission, Comins wrote, amounted to a willful misrepresentation intended to skirt immigration safeguards. Now, listen to that. You mean to tell me when you're helping the UNRWA, it would prohibit you from entering the country, helping people out of a very hard situation? I just could not believe what I read there. Khalil's legal team disputes the allegations, arguing he's being targeted for his activism and faces dangers if returned to either country. And this is the ongoing thing about, as well, the EMS, the asylum. They plan to appeal the ruling before the Board of Immigration Appeals within 30-day deadline, though they acknowledge that successful appeals are rare in such cases. Politico notes that the order comes despite a judge's ruling in a federal case in New Jersey that has blocked Khalil's deportation as that court reviews his arguments. Khalil, and remember, folks, this is because Trump got in the, put his big fat foot in the way and tried to get that guy out, and he should have just left him up there in New Jersey and let this thing pass, just go through the process. So this is, again, Trump instigated chaos. But really, this is an embarrassment, if nothing else. But it's a hardship to this gentleman, Khalil. And wouldn't that just been, that form been, give me an opportunity to add that and then reintegrate, then go ahead and decide? Khalil, a former graduate student and initially detained in March as part of a broader federal crackdown on pro-Palestinian activism on U.S. campuses, at the instance of WHO, which included arrests and deportations of other international students, at the instance of WHO, and 250 representatives of Congress went there to be inculcated, to make more laws to do this nonsense and allow it. He spent 3 months in detention before a federal judge ordered his release, deeming the detention unconstitutional and raising concerns about free speech violations. In a Wednesday statement issued by the ACLU, Khalil accused the Trump administration of using fascist tactics against him simply for his exercise of free speech. Now, without getting too far afield, let's just remind ourselves, this matter may be a simple application problem. It has nothing to do with any of it. If that's the basis of this, then he's going to have to, well, yes, he'll have to be deported. But wouldn't it have been a lot easier and simpler? The gentleman's been here, he went to school here, that he just add the omissions and then let his application continue instead of all this nonsense that they did and they have done and they intend to do, all on the excuse of attacking speech, actually claiming that you don't have the right to speak against Israel. And while due process might be a headache to Trump, Wonder Drug has another apparent perk. Aspirin slash risk of colorectal cancer coming back after surgery in a new research. A daily low dose of aspirin could sharply cut the risk of colorectal cancer returning after surgery, according to a large Scandinavian trial. Researchers at Stockholm's Karolinska Institute tracked more than 3,500 patients who had surgery to remove colorectal tumors. Genetic screening revealed that roughly 40% of them carried mutations in the PI3K pathway, which appears to make their cancer responsive to aspirin's effects, per the release. Those with mutations were randomly assigned to take either 160 milligrams of aspirin a day or a placebo for 3 years after their surgery. Results published in the New England Journal of Medicine showed a striking difference. Patients on aspirin were 55% less likely to see their cancer return than those who took a placebo if you had these mutations. It is a huge, huge effect, notes lead researcher Anna Martling. The findings are significant because nearly 2 million people worldwide are diagnosed with colorectal cancer annually. and reoccurrence remains a major challenge despite advances in treatment. And I wonder how that's going to go. Is that going to go up after the great COVID swindle? The jabs at warp speed? Trump? The study suggests that genetic testing could identify patients likely to benefit from aspirin, a wonder drug described as both inexpensive and widely available. And I can't quite remember what it was. I just noticed a video. This PI3K pathway is very, very important to interrupt. It's a negative signaling pathway. And if you can control it, it won't cause the signaling to go and cause the cells to cause the cancer. And I can't remember now what the triune system comes to mind. You might want to look that up. What the guy says, he was a husband of a wife that had cancer. And he said he's figured out how to interrupt this. The results were only one, his wife, which he only extended the time. But this pathway comes up. And then you look a little bit deeper and you find out that the mesbendazole and the ivermectins have a way of interfering with this pathway. So it's very interesting, this thing. The PI3K pathway needs to be investigated. And there's a whole lot of things that seems to be able to affect it and to control our health. The thing is that this also ties into other things the cell does and our DNA. And it also down-regulates the harm as well to other things that are done in our DNA. So, very interesting. It's not coming to me what there was another chemical nutrient, I suppose. It was a natural thing that you could take to help. Again, these are all just now coming on the scene. And I find it interesting, since the great COVID swindle, people started really looking, I guess. And they've been able to come up with things to help solve their problem. So, this is very, very interesting. I talked to a doctor when I went to a doctor years and years ago. I haven't seen one for a long time. And they telling me about the aspirin being good for your heart. And I finally, years later, found the study that he was talking about. In fact, it was a very interesting study because it found that if you take too much aspirin, it doesn't really help. It actually goes the other way. So this is very interesting here about how you balance that out. This one says 160 milligrams. The heart study was for 80 milligrams or so. That's the baby aspirin. So this is twice that. And my thought on that is, even though at this 160 is within the parameter of the heart medic, that the aspirin helps the heart condition, and that it's not excessive. So I found that to be interesting as well. So there's a whole lot of information that's very interesting to read about relative to this PI3K pathway. And it's a very specific thing. And so that reminds me to say, when we're doing supplementation, and what I do, you really have to find that window of that operative window for you. In this case, it's more generic. The body responds to aspirin in this way, in this middle ground. You can't take too little, and you can't take too much. It has to be just right. It's a Goldilocks dosage, I suppose. And then it starts to work. And so you throw these variables in and keep a track of all these things. And this is where I think maybe AI could help keep track of all these very special windows, where if you don't know that and you don't take it correctly, it won't work. And that's very interesting insight if we kind of shove off to the side. It's really balance. Everything's in a balance of some sort. There's something that everything has to work together, and the body is really good at doing that. And this is always an interest to me. And I don't know if it's going to be an equal. Our aspirin today is now, I believe, most all made from petroleum. But you can walk right outside, and you got a poplar tree. It likely has salicylic acid that you can use. It's in the bark, and you can, if you need a natural source, it's right there. So this is accessible. Nature has the things for us as well, in order to help us if we know about it. So I just found this fascinating. This P13K pathway keeps coming up. I found and ran across it when I was doing the research in the great COVID swindle, looking for help for people, trying to figure out how do we help those with the jab problem. How do we clean their bodies up, if you will. But also, how you avoid of getting sick in the first place, if there was something, right? If there is something. And this is the whole point I told you early on, coming out through 2019, the end of December, you know, I said about the haystack of noise, there's going to be a needle in that haystack. There possibly could be a needle, and we were going to have to look toward ourselves to protect ourselves. What are those medicines? What are those things that are out there that would help us do that? And it seems that this pathway is one of those critical pathways that if you can command it, you can work it to your advantage. If someone else can command it, they can work it for their advantage. So anyway, I thought that was very cool. And like I said, headache for Trump on due process, but here we have a health process that's going on. And I think we start becoming more aware for us. We become more self-reliant. We stop fighting amongst each other. That'd probably give us a good feeling on top of that. As we start looking to fight the problem, correct the problem, not fighting amongst ourselves. Let's gang up on the problem, not fight amongst ourselves. I thought that was very good. I opened up with the broadcast with that. Oh, Gary L., thank you very much for posting that. It came through my feed. For those of you that do that, that's really the only way I get to see, because X has me knocked down pretty good. I don't get to see much. If nobody sends it to me, then I get a whole bunch of nonsense coming through. And I don't get to see what the people I communicate with like. So you got to kind of communicate with all us. Again, get together, find out the paths that we might need, as I like to do. See something that I have an interest in or have studied, and something comes through, and I can advance some information onto somebody and say, here, here's a piece of information. You put that in your pocket, see if it works out. And some of this has been working out as well. The issues with the great Kobe swindle. Someone will have a problem. For myself, I've read some things. Here's this information I ran across, and a lot of times people haven't seen it. So you never know what you know that someone else doesn't. In this case, aspirin, for those of you that do take aspirin daily, instead of doing the 88, maybe consider jump on up to 160. Look at it for yourself. I'm not saying to do this. And see if whether or not now you can cover that P13K pathway and be preventative at some level, like it's preventative at 80 milligrams. This has been BTWRLM 646. I'll be with you next week. Tech Diffs or nature willing.
Echoes call, the hour is near. Behind the woodshed, the truth you'll hear. Every Sunday, the clock strikes three. Hal's voice rolls like thunder, fierce and free. Pull up a chair, lean in close, lessons to learn. Dose by dose, behind the woodshed, no stone unturned. Hal's words ignite, the airwaves burn. Stand up, listen, it's time to learn. Behind the woodshed, where truths are earned. Law to liberty, the spectrum light in Hal's court. No place to hide, a can of bass, ready to burst for unspoken truths and unquenchable thirst. Behind the woodshed, no stone unturned. House words ignite, the airwaves burn. Stand up, listen, it's time to learn. Behind the woodshed, where truths are earned. So mark the time when Sunday comes. Behind the woodshed, beating drums. House voice, a beacon, fierce and bold, in the fight for truth. Truths.
still reigns and Hal's words freedom sings. Join us next week, heed the call, behind the woodshed standing tall.